Mike Rowe here with a few thoughts on my favorite sweatshirt, a classic zip-up hoodie that used to be navy blue but has since faded to what the fashionistas call a distressed indigo. It's 13 years old, soft as a flannel bathrobe, and after a few hundred dirty jobs, demonstrably and undeniably indestructible. This is the kind of sweatshirt girlfriends like to permanently borrow, but I've held on to this one because I got it from American Giant. American Giant makes all their stuff right here in the USA so they can control every link in their own supply chain. That matters, because when you buy American Giant, you not only get great quality, you create jobs for people in factory towns all over the country. No pressure, but if you give a damn about the business of making things in America, you got to support the companies who are doing it right. Go to American-Giant.com/Mike to get 20% off your first order. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's my pleasure to welcome back to the program, friend of the program at this point. We seem to be talking to each other pretty frequently now, which is a good thing. Our man, Matty Icy here. Man. What a weekend it's been for and extending through Monday for Hurricanes basketball.
I mean, great weekend if you're a Miami fan. Terrible weekend if you're an Indiana fan.
Yeah, I mean, and we talked on Sunday, and we'll definitely spend most of the time on the men because that's kind of where your focus is. But yeah. You know, coming out of that bloodbath on Saturday night and Sunday night. You know, if you're an Indiana fan, you're at least thinking, all right, tomorrow we got one of the best teams in the country at home. We're going to pay this back. I mean, it's got to really hurt to then lose that game, too. Because yeah. You got to be thinking, all right, obviously, like, men's basketball is bigger. That's the, you know, and so you're upset that you're met. You're like, all right, we're going to get some payback here at least. And then to lose that game at home, yeah, they got to be down in a bad way now.
Yeah, especially Indiana. Like, there's nothing like the Indiana college fan base.
Oh yeah, no,
when
that
it comes
is
the basketball.
Yeah, that is their thing. Yeah, what a weekend! All right, well, let's get into it. So we're gonna, you know, start by talking a little about the Indiana game on Sunday night, which again I would say in contrast to the Drake game where we, you know, went deep on it and then got a lot of stuff wrong. Let's just say in terms of how the game played out. I thought, you know, not to toot our own horn, we pretty much nailed it on how that Indiana game was going to play out in terms of, you know, what the Canes need to do, where they had advantages. We both felt confident going in, felt it was a better matchup than Drake, and boy, did that show up. So why don't you just, first of all, just what are your initial thoughts and kind of feelings around, I think was probably one of the better turnover performances we've ever had.
No, absolutely. I mean, it was really nice to see Isaiah Wong have a bounce back game. There was a stat going around. I can't remember it like verbatim 100%. I think it was that he's never had two single digit points games in a row. So he definitely came back after that Drake game with a vengeance. Just offensively, man, when everything is clicking like it's just so impressive and like fun to watch this team. Just the way they move the ball, the unselfishness. Everyone, it felt like everyone kind of contributed to this win. And I was still, I mean, I think that there was some possessions where, you know, they kind of burned us a little bit on the defensive end. But I was still really impressed with our defense. You know, I think, you know, this is what I was going to bring up to you, Vishnu. So our defense, you know how I talked about last year where our defense was during the regular season versus like the tournament run. Yeah. I was looking at the KenPom rankings, which are like the advanced rating rankings, and looking at the defensive efficiency in particular, and we've moved up about 40 spots just in these two games. Because of the Drake performance in Indiana. So pretty impressive. I mean, you can see if you've been watching games all season, these past two games, you see the difference. But I mean, like I was going to say, though, I mean, Trayce Jackson-Davis is an amazing talent. He's going to be playing in the NBA. I mean, he burned us a few times. He just is really good at finishing right at the rim, even if you know what move he's going to do. I think you saw what he can do on the defensive end. He had a few block shots as well. But I mean, it was just, it came down to us spreading them out on offense, being able to score. We got to the basket relatively easy. They couldn't really keep up with us. And that's something that me and you talked about going into this game that we really liked. And so there was just this ability to create offense that wasn't there in the first game against Drake, right? You got to feel good about this game if you're a Canes fan. The other thing I want to say too is, I mean, the effort just in terms of like hitting the offensive boards and the fact that it wasn't just like Norchad. Obviously, Norchad did a great job, but Isaiah Wong too, Jordan Miller, everyone just, you know, not giving up on plays, you know. It just really shows like you have to do that if you want to win in an atmosphere like this against really good teams, you know?
Yeah, and I think, you know, you're drawing parallels to last year in terms of the defensive jump. I think one of the things that plays into that is, you know, regular season's a grind. And we are amazing offensively. And frankly, we outscored a lot of teams where I don't know that the effort was necessarily there defensively, possession to possession, and the focus wasn't there. And to be honest, it probably didn't, I hate to say it, didn't need to be, though. You can't, they're not machines, they're men. Like, you're going to wear out if you do that. And actually, I think that's why Virginia stinks in the tournament pretty regularly, other than their one miracle run. Like, you grind, you play that grinding defense starting in you know, early November. By the time you get to March, you're exhausted. You know, it's not the NBA with the shorter shot clock either. You're digging in there for 30 seconds. Like, and I think, you know, now it's money time. You're gonna, you know, every ball is contested. Everything is contested by both teams. You're just not gonna have those, you know, lazy closeouts, slow rotations. This is both teams you're just gonna be much more locked in and you know, not take a possession off. And that extends to the rebounding as well. With the, you know, I saw Nigel Pack getting in there and wrestling rebounds away. Like, just everyone understands that every ball matters. Every possession matters now. And for a team like us, which is undersized but athletic, you know, we do have to use our effort to make up for it. And it's just impossible to every single game throughout the regular season grinding it out to bring that level of effort consistently. Like, you're just not going to be able to do it. But now, you know, six games over 3 weeks, hopefully, knock on wood, you can do it for that. And I think we saw that last year too. And I think we're seeing that again. Like you said, the rebounding was really impressive. The other thing, I mean, I'm just going to clear the floor for you here, because as the since you are the president of the Jordan Miller fan club, I'm just going to open it up. Please talk about his offensive and defensive contributions. He was amazing, but I'm not going to speak more on him because I am clearing the floor for you to the floor is yours, and you have as much time as you want to talk about Jordan Miller.
No, man, I absolutely love Jordan Miller. He's a good kid. He's a good guy. I say kid, but he's, you know, what, like fifth year senior. So, but no, he's just an unselfish player. And I mean, you saw that more so. I mean, last year he took a lesser role because he kind of had to, you know, and he played more of that four position. You know, he wasn't really looked at to create his own offense. It was more like, hey, hit these back cuts, hit these, you know, score off ball, right? Essentially, the ball wasn't in his hands as much, but he was ultra efficient when it was. And I think now we're seeing that kind of pay off this season because he's so good with the ball. He doesn't turn it over. He's a really good team defender. He can switch on to pretty much anyone on offense. Great rebounder. He fights for every loose ball. And then just his overall length too, because he's 6'7", but he has a 7-foot wingspan. So he has that ability, you know, to be a good defender athletically and because of his size. But yeah, he's a really smart player. I think you see that. You see more of his passing ability this year. That's something that, you know, we didn't really see too much of last year just because we had so many guards, you know, and guys that could score. But Yeah, he's a big reason why, you know, we've made it this far. And, you know, like, he didn't have the best game, and I'm sure he'll be the one to say that too in the first matchup, but he still does those little things that don't show up on the stat sheet, and that's why I love him as a player.
Yeah, and that, and I thought the turning point, I mean, I thought we obviously came out and just jumped them, and then, but the kind of the inflection point in the first half, they obviously end up taking the lead briefly in the second half, but was, you know, Norchad gets a second foul, and we tried Walker and Casey on Jackson Davis, and they were getting roasted, and Jordan Miller raised hands and said, I'm going to check this guy, and he's so talented, he's still going to get his. But the amount of effort he then had to put in relation to when Walker and it turned the game to the point that when we opened the second half, we left Jordan Miller on him. We did not go. Norchad was the help defender in the second half. I don't know if you got that. Like, because early on, Norchad was on the ball defending. Jordan Miller did such a good job fronting him, denying him, making him work for his position that by the time the second half came around, that was just the way we were covering him. I mean, and you mentioned he's 6'7". This guy's an NBA big. He met the challenge, and that you talked about his like high character. This is someone that sees his team in trouble and says, "Forget this. I'm taking this. I'm taking on this responsibility." And he did it at such a high level. We actually switched our defensive coverage up and said, "Well, this is working better than plan A. Let's just keep doing this." And that allowed Norchad also to be the help defender, which is actually better because when Jordan's helping, like you mentioned, I mean, Jackson Davis is so, like, I was obviously there. Like, he is so good. Like, at halftime, I looked up at him. He had 11 points. I was like, it feels like he has 20. He is everywhere. Everything's running through him. But by having the bigger, like, having Norch as the help defender, it's better than having Jordan Miller come over just because he's bigger. And, you know, as Jackson Davis is doing moves, you can get your body into him as the help defender a little bit more. And Jordan Miller's better able to front because he's quicker. So I think that switch in coverage. But that all started with Jordan Miller just basically saying, like, this guy's not going to win the game by himself. I'm going to take him out of it. And obviously you can't take someone that talented out of it. But he bothered him. He made him really work. It did grind their offense down. No one else was really doing anything. And that was all on him. It was so impressive. Because you mentioned he's undersized. Like, he's really a guard. It's just unbelievable. Unbelievable, that man's character.
Yeah. Well, and just the fact, like, a lot of what you said, too, about, like, positioning and understanding, you know, where to be when guarding someone in the post like that. You know, it's understanding, like, what Trayce Jackson-Davis is trying to do and stuff. And Jordan Miller understands that, right? It's part of that IQ thing. You know, he understands, you know, how to front him, you know, like, where he likes to catch it in the post, you know, how, you know, he likes to spin off or whatnot. But the other thing too is, man, Jordan Miller on offense was going right at him. There was like two or three times he got blocked once, but I thought one of them was definitely a goaltend. I don't know if you caught.
There was one. Yeah, there was. It was in the second half. Yeah, he goaltended, and then I think we got the rebound and got fouled.
Yeah, it was Isaiah Wong.
Jordan went and talked to the ref after. That's like,
what the hell? Yeah, no, it was ridiculous, yeah, it was but. But he went right at him too, and he used his body to create space, and, you know, was able to finish through the contact. And that was something, like, I mean, last year we didn't really see that as much, you know. So definitely impressive and huge part of the team's success and why they were able to win.
Yeah, and I thought that was also a big key because, again, they did go on like a 13-0 run spanning the halves and took the lead, right?
I mean,
I think the mentality changed. Because we were doing a little bit of fading away. And then at some point early in the second half, I think it started with Jordan Miller, but everyone's just like, I don't care if this guy blocks, I'm going to keep going at him. And, you know, you can only block so many shots before. Just like, he's not going to have 20 blocks. Like, you're going to get to the line, which we did. You're going to finish a lot of those. And I think that just mentality, I don't care if he's bigger. I don't care if he blocks me. We'll get the ball back and go up again. And I think there was kind of a change in mentality there because – I thought in the first half a little bit. I thought we came out shooting well, but we were definitely like shying away from going all the way to the rim when there were opportunities. In fact, the end of the half, actually Wong did a really good job of racing it up the court to go 2-for-1, got into the paint and then thought he was going to get blocked and didn't go up with it. And we ended up running, and then Benji Joseph ended up getting blocked after throwing something wild up there because the shot clock was running out. Like, we could have 2-for-1 then. And I thought the second half, you know, in similar situations, I'm going to go up with this. If he blocks it, he blocks it. Like, and, yeah. And you got to make him make that spectacular play over and over again. Eventually, he eventually got in some foul trouble. Not all the way, like, where they had to bench him, but he had to be a little bit more cautious because you get to three fouls. Like, he doesn't want to pick up that fourth. He's a little bit less aggressive. And I thought, Jordan, like you said, Jordan Miller's so quick that not quick and, like, explosive, just, like, he gets a shot up. And yeah. He was able to score over him a few times, and then he gave him a couple of pump fakes. And I think at that point, like, Jackson Davis, like, just was not confident going for those blocks anymore because he didn't want to pick up a foul. And, you know, kudos to the team. They didn't shy away from any of that. They just kept going at him.
Yeah. No, and you mentioned, too, the other thing, right at the half, they made that three, I think, to cut it to five, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then coming out of the half, they had two plays that were definitely, like, drawn up that they kind of worked out. But, I mean, their offense, they kind of stuck around for, like, a little bit, but then it kind of reverted back because I thought right out of the half, I was like, oh, no, the first, like, two, three plays for them on offense, because the one thing that they weren't really doing was moving and rotating the ball really quickly to get to the other side of the basket. Cause a lot of Miami's pressure is stay on one side of the floor, essentially. Right. Don't let them have that. And then if they try to pass it across court, you get those steals, but they were doing like a pretty decent job of, like, you know, rotating the ball pretty quickly. But I think we did a good job of even just adjusting to not even letting them get in positions to make us pay in that regard. But yeah, I mean, it's the defensive intensity has definitely ramped up with this team. And it's, I mean, I know we're still talking about Indiana, but it's going to be really interesting.
And that's a good transition point. Cause one of the other things I want to talk about from the Indiana game, which I, as an extension of what do you think happens against Houston is. So on Sunday, when we talked, you know, we mentioned they have a legitimate big Indiana. Are we going to see more? Are we going to see AJ Casey? Because he didn't play against Drake. We saw him first. He actually came in before Walker.
Mm-hmm.
And they both played. Neither of them were effective, to be honest. I think Walker is probably more effective. And when he gets his athleticism go, like, he's, again, I said this, let's say, so, God, just stand by the rim and just, like, be athletic.
It's just look for the spacing when your guy goes to help off. Mm-hmm. Like, all you have to do is cut to the basket. And he did it a couple times.
No, he did.
Indiana.
He had
that shots. Dunk and stuff. Yeah. And
he's actually good finishing, like, 10 feet in. And then he wants to take a mid-range or a three-pointer. I'm like, no, just, like, he could actually. But anyway, I think he was definitely better than Casey in that game. But I think we needed both. We needed both to get minutes just because, again, you want to run numbers at Jackson Davis. So, like, now, you know, pivoting to Houston – why don't you talk a little bit about, I know they're basically the best defensive team in the country, so we're going to have to talk about that too. But, you know, just in terms of, they also score 75 points a game and, you know, they're not bad offensively. So I guess, how do you think that the Canes, I guess maybe talk a little bit about how Houston scores, like what their offense is like, and then also how you think the Canes will try to defend them.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're a top 10 offense and a top 10 defense. So a tough matchup when you look at it that way. I mean, the first thing that I see is, like, and I think the thing that's talked about a lot is that both teams are kind of undersized just because, you know, like Jairus Walker, their starting center, and Juwan Roberts, their other big man. They're both, I think Jairus Walker is 6'8" and Juwan Roberts is 6'7". But I mean, don't let it fool you. Juwan Roberts is probably one of the best offensive rebounders in the country. Along with being one of the best shot blockers. And Jairus Walker is a legit NBA talent. I think he's going in like the lottery in a lot of the mock drafts just because of his versatility as a big man. There's a lot of player comps to like a Paul Millsap or that type of big. So, you know, a guy that's kind of undersized but can do a lot of things on the floor. And I mean, they're guards. I mean, I think that's, in my opinion, why they're so good. With Sheed and also Marcus Sasser. Obviously, the health is one thing going into this game, I think, you know, that should be talked about. We don't know how close to 100% they are. Obviously, they played last game. I'm blanking. Who did Houston play last game? Auburn. And they played pretty well. But, I mean...
Yeah, so Auburn was up, I want to say, 10 or close to it at the half.
Yeah.
And... All right, we'll talk about Houston's defense in a little bit, but they just choked the life out of Auburn. There was nothing happening in the second half. But
well, and the thing about Auburn too is I like Auburn has some undersized guards, right? But the thing about Auburn, they're athletic and whatnot. It's a different Auburn team that we saw last year from the tournament.
Oh yeah,
but they aren't the best 3-point shooting team. Right. It's not like when they had Jabari last year. And I mean, he shot like 40 something percent from three.
Well, they had him and Kessler. So there's a completely different Auburn. Like,
It's a completely different Auburn.
And the shooter. Yeah. They're not as good.
Yeah. Actually. Well, and Houston is such a good like perimeter defensive team. That's the biggest thing that sticks out to me is just how physical they are. Like, they're not scared to guard you one on one. And that's what makes this matchup so interesting is how. Do they handle our like free flowing ISO offense, you know, because we're so reliant on kind of going one-on-one to make plays to create offense. But definitely very physical. You see that in the statistics as well. I think that out of, I'm trying to remember the exact number, but they commit, like, I think they're 288th out of 363 Division I teams in like fouls for free throw attempts allowed. So essentially they commit a lot of fouls. Yeah. And obviously us being one of the best free throw teams in the country, I think we're top 20 right now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something major to talk about. And then also too, I mean, the fact with like how we play, we don't generate a super insane amount of free throw attempts, I don't think, relative to how we play. But I mean, in this game, there's going to be that opportunity, in my opinion. So that's going to be one of the major things going forward. And, you know, foul trouble, because if they get some of their guys in foul trouble, I mean, it's going to help us. But on the contrary, when another team is playing physical like that with you, the kind of reaction is to kind of do that back. So can we stay, you know, within our game and, you know, not commit silly fouls? You know, Norchad has had some problems with that and we need him this game. That's going to be a major thing. Those are kind of like the main things I'm looking at. And then And then also our ability to shoot the three as well, because Houston is one of the best perimeter teams. I think that teams are shooting 27% from three against them, which is like one of the best in the country. 27% is really darn good. How much of that is, you know, who you're playing in your conference, you know, like in terms of like, you know, SEC, for instance, they don't really shoot threes at a high level versus, you know, your actual defense, you know, making those types of plays. That's kind of like what I'm looking forward to in this matchup.
Yeah. And that you mentioned the physicality, that's what, especially in the second half against Auburn, like, and I know obviously we're a much better team than Auburn and we're a much better guard oriented team, but they kicked it. Houston kicked it up a notch and it was just, I mean, Auburn could not really do anything. Like, they couldn't even get into their offense at all. And this is after they put up, I want to say, almost 40 points in the first half. It was one of Houston's worst defensive halves in the first half. It's like, they flipped a switch and it was done. They ended up winning by like 20 or something. It was a blowout in the end. They completely they boat raced him in the second half. So I guess we have been a team. You mentioned this actually when we were talking before the Indiana game that, you know, the surprising thing about the Drake game was that our drought lasted that long, but we have had periods of, you know, those 3, 4, 5 minutes of not making a basket. Against Drake, it was more like 10. So that's why it was kind of like, where is this coming from? But I guess should we at all be concerned that, you know, even that Houston routinely causes those sorts of droughts and something we've been a little bit plagued with? And do you think our defense is good? Our new defense that we've seen the last two games, is that good enough to essentially also like counter the droughts with stops of their own, or like how difficult is it going to be for us to guard Houston here?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that scares me the most is the versatility, and then the fact that they're one of the best teams when it comes to getting offensive rebounds. it's just, how do we show up on defense, right? Like, is it what we've seen the past two games, or is it something else? Are we going to play with the same physical aggression that we've been playing with, and, you know, of just wanting, you know, to rebound, get the ball, and just guard and get at them? That's going to be the biggest thing, because this is going to be a matchup when it comes to physicality that we have not dealt with, because it's something, it's a different animal. But at the same time, too, I mean, Houston, I mean, it sounds weird to say, but they're a mid-major team. You know, they play in the AAC, they play against, you know, some different competition.
So you bring that up. That was actually going to be my next question, so I'll just tee it up for you. Their record is gaudy, their stats are gaudy, their competition is not. How impressive they look is based on the competition versus, because I mean, we keep talking about how they're great defense, and I think they are legitimately, like, they jump, their physicality jumps off the screen at you, like, when you watch them play, like, it's like, this team is physical. But how much of that is also, how much of a step up is having to play Miami for them, based on, you know, if you look at that, they've lost three games this year. One was to Memphis in the America, whatever it's called now, the American Conference, I think, AAC, in the championship game without Sasser. They lost to Temple, which is really their only bad loss, and they lost to Alabama. That's it.
Yeah, and I think Alabama's probably one of the better offenses. I mean, probably the best offense that they've played. I'm trying to think of who else they played. I know they played Kent State and Oral Roberts. But those are kind of, you know, mid-major teams that
I got their schedule up, and I don't really see anything that to.
Yeah, so I mean, the biggest thing is, like, it's so hard. I don't want to say it's like fluky, but, like, in a way, like, you have to take these numbers with, like, a grain of salt as well, because when you look at the conference they're playing in, and it's like, you don't know how good these, you know, really good mid-major teams are. At this level, obviously Houston's really good until they start playing this type of competition on a consistent basis. And the thing too is, like, that people don't understand is, like, how are they going to be when they're in a close game, you know, like if they're in a close game with Miami, and, you know, every possession matters at the end of the game in the last few minutes, because it's completely different. You know, when you're playing conference games and you're routinely beating teams by like 30 or 20, it's a different animal. And they have a few teams in their conference that are pretty solid. Obviously Memphis made the tournament. I think UCF is in their conference as well, who they were pretty solid this year.
I do have their, their schedule up. So we can take a look here. Actually, I had it up twice, and I'm sharing the wrong one. Just a second.
All good.
I took a guess at it. The reason is I can't scroll on that one when I'm doing this. Anyway,
a little bit
behind the scenes here on me trying to do multitasking. So I have another screen over here that I usually share off of. That way I can, like, scroll up and down and still see the studio here. So, all right, there we go. So anyway, this is their schedule. There's a couple of, you mentioned they played some solid competition's been inconsistent. You can see the Alabama Virginia. Lot. Yeah, they played Virginia and won. One of the things that I'm noticing, now let me do a little zoom in here. You are kind of seeing against the better competition, what goes is the offense. They have these gaudy offensive numbers, putting up 80 points and all that. Then when they play Alabama, it's 65. Obviously, Virginia's a great defensive team, and they won, but 69. They're not hitting those 80s against, you know, some of their better competition. You mentioned UCF is a good team, 71. They're still winning, but it's not at that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
At level, the Temple game that they lost was they scored 55 points. So I think it's more there. It looks, again, this is just a cursory. We're literally just looking at scores and team names. But it does look like, you know, when they play the tougher competition, they aren't really hitting those higher scoring margins.
No, yeah. I mean, it makes sense. And I mean, it's just, it's tough to tell too, because I mean, you start off as a 1 seed playing against a 16 seed, right?
It didn't look that good, by the way. In that
it
game.
Was a close game yeah. for a while.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was closer than the Auburn game, which I yeah. guess, we're not ones to talk on that regard, but.
Well, and the Auburn matchup too is so interesting to me, because you can afford to guard a certain way against Auburn because of their lack of, you know, shooting and stuff. And I mean, that's kind of how the SEC is. There's not much great shooting. So them getting matched up with Auburn's obviously very tough. They're physical as well, but I mean, it's kind of a matchup that, you know, it's hard to tell essentially, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And basketball's so much about matchups like that. Like, we're not on, you know, even keeled, we're not as much better than Indiana as we showed. It was just a great matchup for us, right? Like, we're better than them, or we wouldn't have blown them out. But, like, we're not, whatever it ended up being, 17 points better than them. That was just, like, that was a nightmare matchup for them. And we didn't want to be overconfident on Sunday, especially after the way we played on Friday. But,
yeah,
I think we both were kind of like, this is bad. If we could pick, a top 15 team to play, this is the one we want to play. And I do feel like Auburn similarly was a good matchup for Houston, just because, like, yeah, like you said, Auburn is a physical team, but they're not gonna, like, defensive, really good defensive teams, if you put them against a team that cannot shoot, it is game over.
Yeah.
You got to be able to shoot defenses out because eventually good defensive teams, you know, they defend inside out. They take away and they force you to knock down tough jump shots. And if you can't do that, it's over. And Auburn's not a good jump shooting team. So I think that was a good matchup. I think both us and Houston had good matchups in the second round to really kind of show both teams at their best. The other one that kind of showed up here, I don't know if they also played St. Mary's, who was a tournament team, and 53 points. They won 53 points. Like,
well, and it's interesting too. So my buddy actually went to St. Mary's. So I've seen St. Mary's play a lot this year. St. Mary's is another team that's a really good defensive team. I mean, obviously they're pretty good offensively. They have they had Aiden Mahaney, who's freshman. I mean, he had 30 point potential every game. But I mean, I could just see that was just like a bloodbath of a game. I'm sure, you know, I don't remember watching that game in particular, but
I mean, yeah,
you can see that kind of matchup, you know?
Yeah. The other thing with these games, and this is the other problem with them playing in this conference, like we're talking about, yeah, it's like in November they played, you know, this team. In December 10th, they played Alabama. I mean, that's how relevant, like how much are they the same team as the one that played these? Cause once you get in the conference and then you look at their conference, they've not really been tested in several months against top competition. So, you know,
it's very much similar to like when Gonzaga gets in the tournament and they're like a high seed and you're like, okay, well, how good is Gonzaga? Mind you, like, you know, the WCC has gotten a lot better in the past couple years, but I mean, I'm talking a little further back. So it's going to be a test, and I'm really interested in seeing, you know, how it goes for Miami, but, it's going to come down to our guards and stuff and just how much do we want it in terms of, you know, getting offensive rebounds, preventing them from getting offensive rebounds. Can we make threes? It's, you know, it's going to be an interesting matchup.
All right. So kind of to wrap things up here a little bit, why don't you give me some kind of like, what does Miami need to do to win this game? What are the keys there? I think you touched on some of them there. All right.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I mean, one of the first ones is, you know, you got to, I mean, I don't want to say win the offensive rebound battle, because I think that might be kind of tough with them being the second best in the nation at rebounding on the offensive glass. But I think you could definitely have to limit those, and more so just limit the second chance opportunities, right? An offensive rebound doesn't kill you if they don't score off of it, essentially, right? And then just being able to generate offense, like get our confidence going early. Isaiah, we cannot afford to have Isaiah Wong have another game like he had against Drake. Hopefully that game against Indiana got his confidence really going. And then to me too, like, we need to be able to hit open threes, because we're not going to have that many opportunities. They do a really good job of recovering and contesting threes. So if we have an opportunity, maybe in transition or just off the catch in half court, we have to be able to knock those down.
Yeah, and I thought against Indiana, we actually didn't knock down as many as we probably, because they were not doing a good job of defending. Like, the percentage looks good. The percentage looks good, but like, Nigel Pack missed a lot of shots that you expect him to make. And we missed some open threes where, you know, you feel like this week you got, like you said, you're not going to get infinite opportunities to shoot open threes like we frankly did against Indiana. And I think the percentage was fine. Obviously we scored 85 points, so everything was fine, but there was like an element of, ooh, you should not, you need to knock those down, which obviously we got away with on Sunday. You're not, you know, if you have the number of open looks you get, you better make more of them. And I think, you know, we had, and I'm just gonna, I mean, I think for this conversation, we're all just assuming that Wuga's fine. Obviously, if he's injured, we're probably dead, to be honest. Like, I don't want to be that pessimistic, but we can't, he's been playing so well. We can't afford, we're not beating Houston without all of our bullets in the gun. So
yeah,
I think, assuming he's healthy though, I think we just need, you know, we had, he was playing solid against Indiana. He was playing okay. And got hurt. Norchad was a beast on the boards. Jordan Miller and Isaiah Wong were awesome. Pack, not his best game. Right. And I think,
well, he started off hot.
Yeah, he hit some shots early, and then he started missing shots. He spent quite a lot of time on the bench too. I don't know if they were worried more defensively when we had the lead. He sat for a big period in the first half, and he wasn't in foul trouble. I think we need all of them to play well at the same time. I think, I know it's just like a stupid, that's typical dumb AM radio analysis, but I think we just need all of our weapons firing. Like you mentioned, like, we can't have a Drake-alike performance from Isaiah Wong. I think we need the Drake-Nigel performance and the Indiana-Isaiah Wong performance, and I think we'll be fine. Because I think they're the two that, because like Wuga and Jordan Miller and Norchad, and you talked about this with Jordan Miller earlier, but I think it applies to all three of them. Even if they're not like shooting well, they fill up the stat sheet. They impact the game like a lot of different ways, defensively, deflections, rebounding. Nigel Pack and Isaiah Wong do the scoring. Like, that is their thing. And we need them both to score well. And I think if they do, I think we'll be fine. If either of them like is not on and not scoring, then it's going to be really hard for us to, against this defense, I think, to get enough points. But I think if both of them could score, because the other ones are bonus, right? Like, if Wuga's making a bunch of shots, great. If he's not, he's still defending, he's still rebounding, he's still probably our best guy at steals, other than maybe Bensley Joseph. He's still disruptive. Like, if Wong isn't scoring, he's kind of like not adding value, to be honest. And like, Pack is probably a negative defender. Like, he's got to be scoring. So yeah. I mean, that's why the pressure's on those two to really just deliver.
Yeah. And it's going to be interesting coming down to, like, I mean, because we didn't talk about this either, seeing who's going to be matched up on who, you know, because for me, it's like, when you have someone like Jairus Walker who can kind of play on the perimeter, shoot the three and stuff, like, do you put Jordan Miller on him? And then they have Juwan, oh my God, I'm blanking on his last name. I think it's Roberts. The guy that hits the offensive glass a lot. He's a good defender too.
It's Roberts.
Yeah, it is Roberts. Okay, I shouldn't doubt myself. I mean, do you put Norchad on him because he's more of an interior player, and then Norchad can roam a little bit? Obviously not too much, because you want to give up offensive rebounds. And then for the guards, you know, who do you put Nigel on? That's going to be the biggest thing. Do you put Wuga on Marcus Sasser? That's going to be the thing that I'm most interested in seeing.
I would say, to answer the other two, is a really interesting question. I don't have a good answer for it. It depends on, like, you know, how they want to play it. I think Wuga's definitely going to get the first shot at guarding Marcus Sasser. I think the one great thing with Coach L, if it's not working, like, he'll switch it up. Like, he's not going to just persist with it. I think Wuga will probably get the first shot there. He's probably the best like-for-like matchup. And also, again, just he's not as, frankly, like offensively, we're going to need Wong and Nigel to do a lot of the generation of the offense. And Wooga can, frankly, rest a little bit more offensively. He's not having to drive into the paint repeatedly. He can, and he's actually done a good job of doing it. But he,
yeah, that's recent, that's, especially,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, but that's not the offense. Like, the offense is really with Wong and Pack trying to handle the ball. So you also don't want one of them to also have to expend a bunch of energy defensively if Wooga can. So I think we'll probably start that way. The other thing, before we're going to do predictions in a second, is, you know, when we played Auburn last year, we were like, how are we going to match up? They have two NBA bigs.
Yeah.
And we did it by having Jordan Miller just kick Kessler's ass so bad they had to pull him. And I do wonder, he's so hard to guard. And I know Houston's athletic, so it's not going to be like that. Mm. But I do wonder if we can force them to mess their rotation up. We are really hard to guard. I mean, this is what Coach Larrick said after the game. When we're playing our game, we're hard to guard.
Yeah.
And some of this is also, what are we going to do to them? Like, is it just trading blows and see who blinks first? Because the Auburn game last year was some of that. Like, they were trying to work it through the post to Kessler, and we were just going to Jordan Miller. And I think he scored the first 6 points of the game or something, just hitting the mid-range that, you know, Kessler's not comfortable coming out and guarding. Again, Houston's a different animal than that team. But, you know, how much are we able to force the issue? Just because we're a tough team to guard. We're awkward to match up with. And sometimes the solution for the opponent is, I can't match up with my starters. I got to, you know, go small or mix my rotation up. And, you know, can we force the issue like that too?
Yeah. I don't know, man, because those two bigs that they have are pretty versatile.
Yeah, maybe, and Juwan, that's
– Juwan Roberts maybe more less of, but Jairus Walker is someone that's – for his size, because he's kind of a bigger guy, he can move really well. So – Unless Jordan Miller's just able to kill him, like, with his patience, you know, because he's really good with that, and his ability to create space with that. I mean, if they might even be matched up against each other, that would be something that I could see, you know. But
yeah, no, it's going to be a much tougher ask. But we do, I guess my overall point is, because we're such an awkwardly constructed team, we do sometimes force teams out of their comfort zone and out of, like, sometimes their plan A just won't work against us. I think that probably happened to Indiana quite a bit, you know, and so maybe we can, we're doing a lot of like, man, how are we going to how are we going to deal with this thing Houston does? How are we going to deal with that thing Houston does? Well, also, they got to deal with us too.
Yeah, and they play at a really slow pace, especially offensively. So that's what's going to be really interesting too.
Yeah, and I guess the last thing, I think, and I hate to bring this up because it's something you don't want to think about coming into the game, but, you know, how tightly the game is officiated, assuming it's officiated evenly. Like, if they let Houston get away with a lot of contact, or even if they just, let's not say Houston, if they allow both teams to play, that is in Houston's favor.
Absolutely.
Or if they have a quick whistle, and then that's in our favor, and that could be a huge difference in this game. You mentioned earlier we're a great free throw shooting team, getting them into foul trouble, all that stuff. We're also, you know, we rely a lot on ball handling, and if we're forced to, and I think this happened a little bit against Drake as well, play through a lot of contact, like the bumps and the reaches and all, it messes our game up. And on the other hand, if they call those as fouls, you know, Houston gets into foul trouble early, they've got to back off a little, and our offense is able to flow. So I think, let's just assume there's not going to be like one-sided officiating.
Is it usually by conference, the officiating? Like, is it like
Well, so it'll be neutral officials.
Like from another conference, right?
Well, they don't really do the straight. So in basketball, it's not the officials aren't assigned to a conference. They roam.
Yeah. So I was going to say, hopefully we don't get any SEC ones because they let them play.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it's going to be, you know, just depends on luck of the draw there. And also sometimes, you know, the officiating just in general, again, not talking bias or anything, is so bad in college sports that, I mean, it is a little bit, even if you have an official that's like, okay, this guy, and I think the reason it's so bad is it's inconsistent. And so you get...
Yeah.
You'll have the same ref call one game tight and the next game, like, let all the contact go. Even though it's the same guy. So it's not necessarily oh, this ref calls it tight, this ref lets contact go. It's more like, what mood is he in today?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we're just have to, obviously, if they're calling it tight, it's to our advantage because it declaws Houston a little bit. If they're letting him get away with contact, I mean, we can play through it. We've done it all year. Like, we don't have a problem with it, but I'm hoping they call a lot of fouls early on them and we can, because that forces them to back off too a little bit.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
All right, man. It's the grand moment here. So Elite Eight last year. I'd much rather be playing Iowa State. I'll say that much. But again, like last year. But all right, how do you think this is going to play out? And throw us a prediction here.
You know, I've been going back and forth about it. I've heard a few people, like in the college basketball world, talk about this matchup and talk about it being the most interesting game of this round. I have every faith in our ability to play defense. I don't think it's a fluke based on the first two games. I think that's the difference. I think that it's going to be tough offensively, and it's going to be an adjustment maybe in the first few minutes, first half even maybe. But I think we get it done. I think we win. I'm going to go 73-70 Miami.
All right, man. Everyone heard that, right? So, like, the Oracle has spoken.
Don't say that.
go ahead and book your Elite Eight tickets. I'll just say, like, I think this is I think the reason everyone's saying this is interesting is it's just the matchup is so hard to get a read on. I think,
yeah.
If the game goes a certain way, it favors one team versus the other. It's not like the Drake game. We felt like they're kind of a worse version of us. The Indiana game, we're like, that's a great matchup for us. This one's more neutral. The other kind of interesting thing here is these are two teams that were in the Elite Eight last year. So no, I don't expect anyone to really be overwhelmed by the moment. So kind of some of that stuff kind of goes by the wayside. At the end of the day, I'm going to echo what I said last week at this time, which is, you know, this team went to the Elite Eight last year and set a goal to go beyond that. And they were talking about it in the offseason. And, you know, a lot of people, you lost McGusty, you lost Wardenburg, you lost Charlie Moore. Like, you're not even going to be nearly as good. And they're sitting here with an opportunity to do just that, to get back to where they were and hopefully this time, you know, take the next step. Obviously they can lose, like anyone can lose. I think this team has so much character that I agree with you, it's going to be tight. And in a tight game, I'll bet on these guys. So I think we'll win this game. I think it'll, you know, similar to where you are, I think it'll be like a one possession game, but I think they'll get it done. This team, there's a reason I don't always travel around the country watching the NCAA tournament.
I was going to say, man, you traveling everywhere. You stay in Albany for a bit.
I'm going to Kansas City. But there's something about, I felt this way for a long time. And actually, like, 2 months ago, I mean, I can pretty much take vacation whenever I want. I'm senior enough. But, like, 2 months ago, I was like, I put it on my calendars and everything. Like, I'm taking these days off. And I put the Sweet 16, too. Because I didn't know, you know, he could play Thursday, could play Friday, don't know. I'm like, I'm not missing this. There's something special about this team. And obviously, I love the University of Miami. We both do these. This is our team. This is our program. And anytime they're in the tournament, you know, we live and die with every shot, whether they have a realistic chance to win or not. There was something about this team this year. I was like, this team's different. Yeah. And I feel like, I still feel that way. And you know, that's not a good analysis necessarily. It's almost like mystical, but I believe in this team to the extent that I'm following them around the country. And whenever this train ends, I will be in the stadium. So, and that is not normal. Like last year, actually last year I did end up in Chicago, but for just the last game, but I didn't go to the other ones. And that was, and I'll be honest, last year going to Chicago, I was like, we're probably going to lose. This was after the Iowa State game. I was at a wedding in Texas, and I changed my return flight to go through Chicago so I could go to the game. And then
went through
there and then came back to D.C. at night. So I was in Chicago for like 5 hours for the game. But in my head, I'm like, we've never made this far before. We might never do so again. I want to be there. This time, I am going for a different reason, which is I think we're going to win. And I want to be there when we win. And so it's kind of, so that's not the reason we're going to win, obviously. But I mean, that's what my feeling on this team has been really for months. As it started to come together, when you could see, like, you know, you never know when you have guys coming in, like how they're going to fit in and all that. When you could see like how special Norchad is, how much of a team player Nigel Pack is, because you kind of think you're bringing this kid in who scores a lot of points. Is he going to fit in with the team? And then you kind of like, man, he's a great teammate. And when you start seeing that stuff come, then like, man, this team is really something else. And then all of a sudden, like, you know, Wooga, the guy who Kansas's halftime adjustment was, just don't guard that guy. He won't shoot it. Like, no one in the right mind would try to do that now. He'll score 50 points. Like, I mean, like, when you saw all that improvement, I'm like, this team can do some stuff. And I still believe that. And by stuff, I didn't mean get to the second weekend.
And you know what's so crazy to me? Obviously, we're focused on this season because this season's not done. But you look at it, and obviously Jordan Miller is going to be gone no matter what because, you know, he doesn't have any eligibility left. But you could essentially return everyone else, I think, right? On roster, which is insane for a team that, you know, with how they've, you know, the run they've been on the past 2 years. So, you know, it's, you know, win or lose, I think we're winning, but, you know, we should still, you know, have a lot of hope and stuff with, you know, where this program is. And
this, I think, in contrast to the other, because we've been at this stage several times, we've obviously won this game once, but, you know, Jim Larrañaga's made the Sweet 16. This is the fourth time, I believe.
I think so.
And then obviously the Loyola game was like, that team was definitely, that was Final Four caliber, right? So, I mean, we've had good teams, but it's always been, this is the first time we've strung multiple ones together. And it does feel like, to your point, whatever happens, and again, we both expect the team to win, and it'll be very disappointing if they don't. I think what's different about this time is this does not, like, again, we'll see the opposite of what I felt last year. I was like, I'm going to Chicago knowing that Kansas is a monster and they're probably going to beat us, but we might never get this far again. I got to be in the arena. This does not feel at all like that. This feels like we might be here next year and the year after and the year after and the year after. And I think that's the foundation he's built here. And this time it feels like it's sustaining much more than the other ones, which felt much more like end of a cycle stuff, a bunch of seniors together. You know, that 2013 team was very much lightning in a bottle, and it did not, you know, you weren't like, oh, 2014, we're going to build up. No, it was like, that was clearly like a one-off for that period of time. And then when the Angel Rodriguez and Sheldon McClellan, when that team reached their top, you know, Villanova beat them, you're like, okay, end of a cycle. And then you had to cycle back through to like when Lonnie Walker and Bruce Brown, and then obviously that's the Loyola one, so they didn't get the Sweet 16, but they were certainly that caliber. And then there's a dip. We missed the dip this time. Yeah. And I think because we did lose McGusty and Moore and Mordenberg, the fact that we were able to replace them, not just with NIL, I know that's been all the press, right? But, you know, Norchad Omir is Nicaraguan. I don't think he wanted to go play in Syracuse. Like, he wanted to be in Miami.
Well, he has a Miami background.
Yeah, so he also, but I mean, come on. Like, us attracting, like, our point guards, like, our backup point guard six man is Haitian. Like, where does he want to be? Like, I mean, some of this is so, but I think, you know, it wasn't just Pack and Norchad coming in, right? It was also, like, development of players in-house. Mensley Joseph and Wigger Popple are so much better than they were last year. And there's no reason to think the three freshmen we brought in this year are not going to make similar steps forward. And then you're talking about, you know, having Casey and Faber Air and Watson playing, you know, major parts on this team next year. And all of a sudden, yeah, you mentioned Jordan Miller is the only one that has to go. I'd be shocked if everyone else is back. Let me just put it that way. Like, I think Isaiah Wong in particular is, I mean, he's one ACC player of the year. He's I don't know that his stock will ever go up from where it is now. Now, he could come back to say, I think we can win the championship if we come up short. And that might be the goal. It might be a team goal. But from an individual standpoint, like, he's NBA ready. Nigel Pack, I don't know what his draft grade would look like. He might come back.
He kind of has to come back. He's right. I don't think because he kind of was like a late bloomer in terms of this season, you know.
Right.
I mean, that's what can kind of happen when you transfer. I mean, Jordan Miller talked about how that was the case for him last season. I definitely think he needs another year. I don't think he would be drafted this year. It would be more of like a two-way deal or whatnot, especially because of his size, you know, being 6 foot.
Yeah, so, but I think I'd be surprised if Zay is back and then Jordan Miller goes. But then we have three freshmen who all look talented enough that if they're developed, and even like Favor Error, when he's been on the court, does not look good. If you remember Abuko Zundu, his first year, did not look like he knew how to play basketball. He was a really good center by the time he left. And
even Jakiri, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, Jakiri. That's true. Yeah, he couldn't even really, like, didn't know how to position himself and all that. So, like, Coach L specializes in developing players as well. So this does feel like sustainable. And so I think it's an exciting time regardless. But, you know, after we cut down the nets in Houston, we can talk about next year. Let's just speak that into existence. Anyway,
I'll see you in Houston for sure.
All right. We'll definitely meet up in Houston. So, all right. So let's do this then, as we kind of wrap this up. If the Canes win on Friday, let's talk Saturday and talk previewing whoever they're playing, which will be Xavier, Texas.
I can do that.
If they don't, then let's meet up next week and we'll kind of wrap this season up and kind of talk. Then we'll really dig into the what next for the Canes discussion.
Yeah, but sounds good.
So in summary, I'll talk to you on Saturday. And as always, go Canes.
Absolutely.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.